This show is furnished by Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervy's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervy. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervy.
Good evening, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KABC.com. I am Alan Gervy, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn. And I am excited to be here live Thursday night, our new night, 7 p.m. Thanks for tuning in. We moved from Sunday evening to Thursday evening, and I am excited tonight because we have a new guest host who has never been on the show before, but she is very, very familiar to KBC and to Fox News and Fox Network and a number of different stations. She is Lauren Savon, famous, well-known TV anchor. I love it. She's laughing. She calls herself a news personality because she says in her words that a journalist is a stretch. I wouldn't agree with that, Lauren. You are a journalist. Two Emmy nominations with the Fox Network, the Fox Record, Strategy Room, co-host Studio 11 LA, with Dr. Drew, of course. Mm-hmm. And she's been an actress, Hotel Artemis,
I forget the name of that movie.
I love
Transcendence.
It.
Transcendence.
I just wanted to make sure you remembered that movie in Taken 3. Yeah. She has a great podcast, Life with Lauren, and now she's doing Beyond TV, which I was fortunate enough to be on
some
time ago, and she is really great, and we need to welcome her to Gervy's Law. Lauren.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me, Alan. Thank you for the applause. Amazing.
Yes.
We have such a huge audience. I haven't actually met you in person.
And you know what? We were going to meet in person today.
We were supposed
something
to have
came
our
up,
first, yeah.
And unfortunately, I'm not there. We are looking at each other on FaceTime.
That's
you're looking
true.
Great.
We're keeping the mystery alive between the two of us, right?
That's
we're
true.
We're keeping it hot a little longer.
And Lauren, on her first show on Gervy's Law, is in studio, so she's in the captain's chair. And I'm
right.
here in Sedona, actually, around some beautiful red rocks. And I want to wish you a happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. That's right.
2 days
just
ago.
Had a birthday. Mm-hmm.
How was it?
It was a heck of a lot better than last year's birthday. I'll tell you that. The first couple of weeks of quarantine were rough for celebrations. So this year was great. My whole family's vaccinated. We all got together. It was a blast.
That is great. Did you do anything special? I mean, obviously with the family it's special, but did you do something for yourself? Like, did you go have a massage or something that you couldn't do last year?
That's a really good question. You know, what did I do? I mean, we went out to dinner, which is pretty exciting nowadays, you know?
Yeah, it is.
We dined together. The fact that things are opening up again, it's just, you can feel like the energy is different in LA right now than it was just even, you know, a month and a half ago.
Exactly. No, I feel it, even though I'm not in LA right now. But I'll tell you, you still have the weekend coming up.
That's true.
So you can party. I mean, it's supposed to be a birthday week, not a birthday.
Alan, I go for a birthday month. So
month.
I have,
oh, good.
Yeah, I have a few weeks still to
you
get it all in.
You have a few weeks. And, well, I wish you all the best, and you'll have to let
Thanks.
Us know in the future what you did for the month. We still have time, and I'm surprised you didn't tell me that I should be having a party for you at KBC Studios.
I was upset that there was no cake when I arrived today, but I'll let it slide. You still have a couple
of
weeks.
If I were there, there would have been a cake.
I know it.
And everything that you love, even though I don't know it, but we'll find out. And I know one of the things that you love is speaking with our guest. We're fortunate today, again, to have Gloria Allred on the show. And I know you've spoken to her a number of times.
Sure.
And you have some things in common in the sense that she's represented a lot of people who have been victims, Me Too victims,
yes.
And you as well.
Yeah, she didn't represent me, you know, legally, but I did talk to her when I was, you know, kind of going through it back in the end of 2017, 2018, when things were coming out about Harvey Weinstein. You know, she's a woman that has been doing this before it was a trendy hashtag. She's been, you know, defending victims of sexual assault, sometimes in the face of a lot of controversy over it. We have to remember it's only been recently that, you know, the Me Too era kind of took off and people started really listening to women that came out, because a lot of things were done behind closed doors. There were settlements made, there were NDAs signed. And so, it was never this public thing that it is now today, which I'm grateful for.
And that's true. She has had a history of, like you say, representing victims. She herself was a victim many, many years ago, having been raped in Mexico as a young girl.
Yeah.
And she has fought for so many people. And I remember the first time she was on the show, I said, does it ever bother you when people will criticize you for being out in the media and talking in public about these issues for women, mostly women, men as well? And she said to me, you know, I will never be ashamed. I will never be embarrassed about speaking out in public because I am giving a voice to people who don't have a voice.
And she's absolutely right about that. And, you know, a lot of times when you find yourself to be a victim in these situations, you sometimes don't have the words, you know, you can't articulate what you're feeling and what you're going through. And she's done a remarkable job at actually bringing it to the forefront and helping those who are voiceless really be heard. And, it's not something easy to do. So when you have someone,
Lauren,
like her on your
side,
I have
to ask you, because you're talking about her strength and you're talking about how she has said and done things that other people won't, but you did too. When we talk about, you know, coming out and talking about a really difficult experience, where did you find the strength, you know, and we're going to talk about this later with Harvey Weinstein, but where did you find the strength to speak out and be so much, you know, I read about people, you have so many followers at Lauren Savon, where you tweet and on Facebook, and so many people respect you so much for having the strength to use your platform also to speak out.
I spoke out because I saw Harvey Weinstein negating the things that these actresses had come out and said about him. And you know, what happened to me happened back in 2007. This was a long time ago. But all along, I knew that this guy was bad news, right? I knew he was not a nice guy. He was a jerk because I knew what he did to me. So when these actresses had the strength to talk to the New York Times, to talk to, you know, there was a magazine article written. And then he came out and said, oh, they're lying. It's sour grapes. They were just upset they didn't get a part they wanted. You know, I'm completely innocent. I knew that that he was lying. And so I thought if I could just at least validate what they were saying, I just wanted to stand up for them because I knew they were telling the truth. And I had been, this wasn't a secret I had held for years and years. I told everyone. And anytime his name came up, I would say, oh, I have a Harvey Weinstein story for you. You know, it was one of those stories
and
that—
It's a
doozy. And I think it took away some of the trauma for me by just telling people and like seeing the look on their faces. And I got to tell you, Alan, a lot of people that work in Hollywood weren't shocked by that story. They're like, oh, yeah, that's Harvey. So this was like a really badly kept secret for years and years. And so I kind of just spoke out because I wanted people to know that those women were not lying. This wasn't about, you know, not getting a role. This was serious. Yeah.
And why did you choose Megyn Kelly to talk to her about what happened to you in that restaurant where Harvey exposed himself and pleasured himself in front of you?
Yeah. Well, Megyn and I had worked together at Fox News Channel, so I'd known her. And, you know, when she initially heard the story, she reached out to me and said, would you come on my show and talk about it? And I trusted her. She's a really smart woman. And I knew what she had gone through at Fox News Channel with Roger Ailes. So she's kind of been there. And I felt comfortable with her.
Yeah, you know, we had Gretchen Carlson on our show, and she told us a lot of things that went on at Fox.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, you've been affiliated with Fox, done so much work with Fox over the years.
Yeah.
And you never had the experiences that Gretchen and Megyn and some of the others did?
I did. I did have those experiences, not to that extent. I mean, I was pretty low on the totem pole at Fox News Channel when I worked there. And so, you know, Roger was kind of a mentor. He agreed to meet with me and look at my tape and kind of, you know, give me pointers and things like that. And it definitely got weird in his office. You know, he'd want me to turn around and see what I look like, because if I'm going to be on TV, he needs to see the backside and all that kind of stuff. But I was really young at the time, and I just assumed, hey, if you want to be on TV, that's what you got to do, right? So a lot of that behavior I kind of just chalked up to, well, I'm new in the corporate world. This, I guess, is how it's done. And I didn't really know that that's not appropriate and that's not what goes on everywhere
right.
on TV.
And hopefully with the Me Too movement, things will change in the future.
That's the
how. And we only have about 30 seconds, but sure. How did you feel when Roger Ailes died? Like, what does it feel like when you're thinking, he was a creep to me?
I have a lot of mixed emotions because he gave me a shot. You know, he kept his promise to me. I wanted to be on air so badly. He said, go to a small market, get your experience, and when you're ready, I will hire you back. And he kept his word. He hired me back to the news channel. And for that, I will forever be grateful. And, you know, all those shows and movies that depict him, they depict all the bad things about him. But on the other side of the coin, he built that network, really,
right.
single-handedly. And he was a really powerful boss that we all cheered for. We all wanted
wow.
it to succeed. So I don't think that really came across.
Yeah.
But of course,
that's
interesting. He had a bad
it's side
too. Yeah.
And I appreciate that perspective. I think that's important to talk about. You know, Lauren, it's so great to have you here.
It's
and
great to
we
got to
take
Alan.
A break.
Yeah.
And we'll talk to Gloria Allred after the break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Gloria, don't you think about it?
There we go. We don't mess around. We got the Gloria song on. She loves it. I'm sure she's dancing in her home. I'm here with Lauren Savon, who's guest hosting with me today. Glad to have Lauren with us, and I know she's very familiar with Gloria Allred, having spoken to her a number of times. Gloria Allred doesn't need an introduction. Usually I make these great introductions, and everyone says, that's the best introduction I've ever heard. Well, Gloria really doesn't need one. She's heard it all before. She's probably the most famous woman attorney in the world. She's an activist, a victims' rights attorney, advocate for justice and equality. Gloria, welcome back. It's so great to have you on the show again.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me, Alan. And hi, Lauren. How are you?
Good to talk to you again, Gloria.
You too. You know, thank you.
Gloria, I know we're not in the studio. I'm not in the studio. You're not in the studio. I miss seeing you. And hopefully when things get a little bit better, we can all be in the studio together for your next update. But we've got a lot to cover.
Yeah.
And I want to give you the roadmap, Gloria, because I know you're going to have something to say with all of these topics. You tell me if you don't like the order, but we're going to start with this order. We're going to start with talking about George Tyndall, the USC gynecologist. We'll go to Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, Armie Hammer, then Harvey Weinstein, if we have time for Jeffrey Epstein. How does that sound?
Sounds good to me.
All right. Lauren. Let's talk about George Tyndall. You've told me you've known people who were victims. Gloria, of course, is representing with John Carpenter 72 victims. Lauren?
Yes. Gloria, I mean, this award, over $1 billion, this is record-breaking, right? I don't think this has ever been done before.
Well, we are just thrilled to be part of the really what I call the historic as opposed to historic settlement, which we believe to be the highest single sexual abuse and sex harassment settlement against a university in civil litigation history. And this is a global settlement. You gave the total, Lauren, but what we announced just a few weeks ago for our group of 702 women, and we represent 72 of them, who Dr. Tyndall sexually abused at USC and who decided to opt out of the federal class action settlement against USC. The global settlement of which we were a part is $842,400,000.
Wow.
So Yeah, we're very proud of our 72 clients who are victims no more. They're survivors. Might add, our clients decided to opt out of the federal class action settlement, which was approved against USC more than 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And instead of being part of that, they decided to continue with us to continue to litigate the case against USC. And as a result, they are going to receive substantially more than they would have if they had decided to be part of that federal class action settlement, because the average that any victim would have received if they accepted the class action settlement, the person, you know, those who endured the most severe form of sexual abuse will receive only an average of $96,000. But in our class action settlement, for those who continue to litigate with us, they will receive an average of $1.2 million.
Wow.
So our clients obviously made the right choice, and we thank them so much for trusting us, because we felt that what women were being offered in the class action settlement was too low given the harm they had suffered. And so we're glad they trusted us and went on to litigate and fight on, and now they're going to get a very important form of justice.
Gloria, did you really just say fight on? That's very appropriate with USC. Fight on being their motto. I have to ask you, Gloria, though, when you talk about the 72 that you represent and the others that were part of the settlement outside the federal class action, how much did they have to prove? How much discovery did you do? As a lawyer, we're always trying to prove a case. Was this a situation where maybe these victims did not have to get so involved with the discovery process and proving their particular abuse versus others because of the grandiosity of the whole awful issue?
Well, not everybody had to do a deposition, and there were a lot of other lawyers involved who did a great job, I might add. But they took the risk, and, you know, they did what they needed to do, submit facts. And now we're not quite at the end of the line, but we almost are, because what's going to happen now is that there is going to be an allocator appointed. In other words, someone, either a retired judge or maybe a professional mediator, somebody who's skilled in sexual abuse cases, who is going to be the person who is going to decide how much each victim/survivor is going to receive.
Oh, that's interesting.
So out of that settlement. So, and there'll be an appeal if the person feels that they weren't awarded the appropriate amount. So this is going to happen. Here's the point. The point is our clients and others were believed, and that is why USC entered into this settlement. And to as a statement that women will be believed, at least in certain cases, and this is one of them. And that's important, because many women feel that they are not going to be believed.
Well, many of these women made complaints, made written complaints. They tried to report him, and you know, the university protected him for years, for decades. 702 women. I mean, that's an astounding number. So, do you think other universities, they'll look at this and realize it's not worth protecting one employee?
And you know, you make a very important point, Lauren, because when we filed our very first lawsuit back in 2018 against Dr. Tindall and USC because of the very serious allegations made by the female students for many years, we alleged that USC knew of the inappropriate conduct by Dr. Tindall, but they failed to take appropriate measures to protect innocent students who were under his care. So, in fact, when I held a press conference to announce the filing of that lawsuit, I stated at that time, mm-hmm. almost 3 years ago, that we had a declaration from we called her a Jane Doe, mm-hmm. that she had notified USC in 1991 of Dr. Kendall's inappropriate conduct.
Wow, that's
but
crazy.
Still, Yeah, he was allowed to continue. And, you know, we have a client who was sexually abused by him just a few years ago. So for all of those decades, he was allowed to remain there and continue, you know, to essentially sexually abuse women. Wow. So,
you know,
I think this is an appropriate result given what we've alleged.
We talk about the appropriate result, and we're going to move on, but I have one more question, Gloria. While the victims are the most important people in this situation, this is a legal show, and a lot of people want to know, how do legal fees work with these kind of class action suits and situations where there's $1.1 billion being paid out by USC?
Great question.
Well, the answer is that I can only give you general answers because I cannot disclose what my arrangement is with my clients, because that would be attorney-client privileged and confidential communication. So we don't ever disclose that. But I will say in general, to answer your question, these types of cases are almost always taken on a contingency. And in the contingency situation, what that means is lawyers are the ones that are taking the risk. In other words, if they are successful in obtaining a settlement for the clients, then the lawyers get paid a share of the or a percent of the settlement, which is agreed to when the lawyers are retained in the first place. In other words, is it one third? Is it 40%? Is it something different? And that is the agreement. And generally, lawyers do not get paid even their share unless there it is in writing in the retainer agreement and unless the lawyers are successful in obtaining a settlement. If they're not, the lawyers do not get paid.
You know, all I can say is we're not going to ask specifics, but next time I see you, Gloria, I think you're buying the coffee.
You got a deal. Such a deal.
I guess so. Well, congratulations on that. We only have a couple minutes before the break, but let's talk about Andrew Cuomo. You know, I have some words that I could say about him, but I won't. Tell us, you had that press conference with Sherry Ville, one of many people who apparently are claiming to be abused. Tell us about Sherry Ville's case.
Right, and she either is the ninth or the tenth woman to accuse Governor Cuomo, and she's a resident of New York State. She's a businesswoman. She's a wife. She's a mother. She's a grandmother. She's been married for more than 30 years. She's got three children and one grandchild. And what she described has been very disturbing to her ever since she became the victim of the governor's unwelcome and unconsented to physical contact with her. And that included, but was not limited to, grabbing her face and kissing her. And this was in 2017. And for years, she wanted to report what the governor did to her. But some members of her family, Alan, discouraged her from filing the complaint because they wanted to protect her. And they feared that if she made what happened to her public, that the governor might use his power to retaliate against her and her family. And so for that reason, she made the difficult decision to remain silent. But recently, she decided that the people of New York and of the country deserve the truth, that the governor needs to be held accountable for what he has done. And so for that reason, she decided to overcome her fear and speak truth to power, and because she feels it's never too late to do the right thing. That's
Gloria, but in doing so, she actually gained some people who were critical of her because they said that that photo was put on Facebook a couple years ago by, I think, her daughter, and they were kind of celebrating it. And people have said, well, why would you do that at that time and then now come out a couple years later when you celebrated it on Facebook?
Okay, well, my client never celebrated it on Facebook or anywhere else, so I don't know where that comes from. I have no idea what her I don't know what her daughter did, but I could tell you that's not what Sherry did. Monday of this week, we did speak to the investigators for the New York Attorney General, who was investigating the allegations by all of these women against Governor Cuomo. So she did give her interview this week. And also, by the way, there's news today, I think in the New York Post, that one of the earlier women who is anonymous, who is an employee of the governor, alleges that he not only grabbed her, it's a different woman from my client, and hugged her, but that alleges that the governor also put his hand down her blouse and touched her breast, groped her breast. But these allegations have to be taken seriously. For my client, she felt, you know, she knows that she said the governor said that he's Italian, Italians kiss. But she says, I'm Italian, too. She said, in our family, we don't just, you know, we kiss each other when we meet family members, but we don't grab strangers and kiss them. Also, she felt it wasn't just a kiss, it was sexual. And, you know, he's calling her beautiful and being very aggressive with her, and not just once, but on two occasions. Yeah. And so there's the photo. Everybody can see it on my webpage, GloriaAllred.com. Just go to where it says videos and statements, and you can see the photos and decide for yourself.
You know, Gloria, we have to take a quick break, but I want to ask you, and I think Lauren has a couple questions on this after we come back from the break, talking about Andrew Cuomo's future and what this all means. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KB.
You're listening to Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Do what they say what you mean, but one thing leads to another.
Yes, one thing does lead to another, and so many people are thankful that Gloria Allred is there as the lawyer extraordinaire to help people who don't have a voice for themselves. She speaks for them. And Lauren, isn't it great to have Gloria with us today? Because we hear from the guru, the expert. We hear about these stories in the news, but Gloria can give us the real perspective on it.
That's right. I mean, because, you know, she represents the victims. And Gloria, you know, my question to you is, you know, these victims have come out recently, although a lot of this behavior happened throughout the years. You know, I just remember in 2020 when this pandemic started and we looked at Governor Cuomo as like this sound voice of America. And we all, you know, he was getting pushed to run for higher office and maybe there was a presidential run. And then all of a sudden things started to fall, you know, the wheels fell off and one woman came out, then another, as you know. What do you make of the timing of that? What was it that made the women start to speak up?
That's a good question. And I don't know the answer because I haven't spoken to the other women. But I will say that I think after it was the first one that came out, or maybe it was the second, someone, a reporter, asked me, do I think there'll be more? And I said, yes, absolutely. Yes. I think there'll be more. Because, you know, usually it's, you know, it's one of the tip of the iceberg situations. And right. Sure enough, it is now with 9 or it might be even 10 women. I'm not sure. But now there is an investigation going on. And I've said today that I think there should not only be an investigation by the New York Attorney General. And there is also, by the way, an investigation by a legislative committee, the Assembly.
Right.
Committee in New York State Legislature. They're doing for an impeachment investigation. But I think there should be an independent investigation of why the system fails women in New York. It fails to protect them from sexual harassment in the workplace. Because obviously it's failing if this many women, or and who knows how many more, I don't know, may have, you know, been victimized by sexual harassment, whether it's the governor or anybody else in the workplace. And, you know, why is this still happening in 2021?
Yeah. Right.
When we are at such laws against it, and when it's mandatory, for example, for employers to take sexual harassment courses and mandatory for employees to take them. You know, it's not enough to take a training course. There has to be monitoring in the workplace to make sure the workplace is not toxic. There's not a hostile environment. that, you know, there's not treating, you know, seeking to have sex with employees and employees being in fear that if they don't do it, they may lose their job. They may be retaliated against.
Right.
I mean, we have to do better. So I think this goes well beyond Governor Cuomo.
But many of these women that are accusing Cuomo, some of them never even worked for him. One woman said he came to look at flood damage in her house and inappropriately
kissed her. Well, that's my client.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So exactly. So, and you know, another woman said this happened at a wedding. Legally, what's the difference there?
Well, the difference is that if it's in the workplace, in other words, that someone is employed by the state of New York, and of course the governor is the employer of all of the state employees, then that's sexual harassment in the workplace.
I see.
It is not, you know, for someone like my client, technically she would have a right to sue. She's not planning to sue the governor. She could sue and allege that she has been the victim of a sexual assault, grabbing her face and kissing her. By the way, when he did, a lot of people have seen that photo, he had hold of one of her hands.
Yeah.
And with the other hand, he had his hand on her face. And she only had one hand left, and she was holding her little dog, her little Yorkie. So literally, she couldn't get away. And that's when he kissed her again outside of the house. He had already kissed her inside of the house. It was not welcome either time. And she
Gloria,
thought it was sexual.
We've talked a lot about sexual harassment in the workplace, and as you know, of course, I represent injured workers, people who are wronged in the workplace. Sexual harassment is a workers' compensation claim. Now, Sherryville is not in that situation, but people who work for the governor would have a workers' compensation claim, in addition to the civil claim that they would have potentially for this kind of wrongful behavior. One of the things before we leave, Andrew Cuomo, I just want to say that it's important, and it really shows who you are, Gloria, when politics doesn't enter the picture on these issues. You know, you have supported Democratic candidates for years and years, and there he is, Andrew Cuomo, the Democratic governor. And that's really not what's important here. What's important is the behavior of an individual, regardless of the politics. And hopefully the investigations that take place will look at the behavior, and I'm sure you would agree with that.
You're right. And I want everybody to know, you know, the cost of the wrong should not be borne by the victim. It should be borne by the wrongdoer. And at the end of 2019, I'm sure you remember this, Alan, our law firm won the largest verdict from a jury in 2019 for one victim of sexual harassment. We
right.
won $58,250,000 for one victim of sexual harassment by a billionaire. A couple of months before that, before another jury, we won for another victim more than $5 million. That's from another jury. So everybody should know that, you know, sexual harassment is not a laughing matter. Juries are taking it seriously. The public is taking it seriously, and it's got to stop. Otherwise, there are going to be serious consequences for those who sexually harass employees.
And, of course, you're talking about Allred Morocco and Goldberg, your firm. You're not a sole practitioner. You have a lot of people helping with these cases. You can't represent all of these people without having a village to help you with it. Lauren, let's move on because we're going to run out of time. I want to talk a little bit about the Army Hammer case.
Absolutely.
Why don't you take the lead on this?
Well, Gloria, I mean, I'll have you. I learned of, as she goes by online, House of Effie. Before, you know, any investigations were actually underway, this was a really brave woman who took her own screenshots, you know, to prove that Army Hammer had sexually abused her. And she really went out on a ledge to do that. I mean, we don't know her full name. It wasn't made public. But those text messages and the photos that she shared were, you know, really graphic. And I believe it was her that really started this entire case against Army Hammer. Is that true?
I don't know because there are a number. she's not the only woman who came out.
No, she's not. But I thought that she
again,
was.
But I think she certainly, even before our press conference, has, certainly there's been discussion of Armie Hammer. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah. Well, the criticism here was that, we can't, indict an actor over having some kind of sexual fetish, that these were two consenting adults. They had a certain fetish. And why are we accusing him of this as sexual abuse? But that's actually not what she is claiming here.
Right. Yeah. I mean, she isn't claiming she in the press conference that we did, which is also on my webpage, by the way, she did not allege sexual fetishes. What she said was, she alleged, and what she said was that on April 24th, 2017, she said that Armie Hammer violently raped her for over 4 hours in Los Angeles.
Yes.
And she said, during which he repeatedly slammed her head against a wall, bruising her face and committing other acts of violence against her to which she did not consent. And she also stated that during those 4 hours, she tried to get away, but he wouldn't let her, and that she thought he was going to kill her, and then he left with no concern for her well-being.
Right.
So, alleging a rape is very different than talking about fetishes. I mean, the whole issue really is consent. Once again, the issue is consent. Is it welcome? Whose burden is it to prove consent? I think what it is, look, if a man wants to do something of a sexual nature to a woman, all he has to do is ask, is this okay? Is that okay? Is that all right? Not just exercise, in a sense, the arrogance of power and do what he wants. I mean, those days of, I'm going to call it male privilege, they can do whatever they want, mm-hmm. those are gone. They have to be accountable. And women are just not going to be silent anymore. And I know there are a lot of powerful men who are kind of thinking, oh, my God, are they coming for me next? Well, the answer is maybe, depending on what you did to them.
Yeah.
So time to step up and be accountable and make things right. And, she did file a police report.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens.
Well, to play devil's advocate here for a moment, a lot of men will argue, well, what if a woman says yes in the moment and then later regrets her decision? Maybe these women felt, oh, he didn't call me the next day. He didn't pay me any attention. And all of a sudden they get angry and then they want, then they'll go to the police or then they. I mean, what do you tell people in those situations? What do you tell men to make sure that if they're going to, behave that way, that they need to make sure everybody's on board?
A contract.
Yeah,
that's what we need now, I think.
Buyer's remorse is what you're describing.
Yeah.
and what they allege, and, I represent rape victims every day in civil cases and sometimes in criminal cases. For example, in the Harvey Weinstein criminal case coming up in New York, coming
LA.
Up in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, the extradition hearing is on Monday. In New York to try to extradite him to Los Angeles for the criminal case here. But I deal with other attorneys every day on rape cases where I'm representing victims, working to get them settlements or litigating their case. And often the other attorneys will say exactly what you just said to me, Lauren, that, oh, well, it was consensual. And then afterwards she changed her mind because, he didn't stay and talk to her or he didn't want to go out with her again or whatever. Look, every case is fact specific. Every case has to be judged by the evidence. And, sometimes, one person is more credible than the other. And often there is some type of corroboration. Not everybody does go to the police. In fact, probably the minority of all victims go to the police.
Yeah.
So the fact that a person doesn't go to the police doesn't mean she was not raped. That's a rape myth to think that somehow her credibility is undermined because she didn't go to the police or have a rape kit done at a hospital. But sometimes she will do what we call a fresh report. She will call her friend, call her mom, you know, talk to someone.
Write it in a diary.
About what just happened. Yeah. And that really matters. Yeah, write a diary. Do other things. So we have to look at all the facts and circumstances and then see who seems to have the stronger position.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll catch up on the Army Hammer case. I'm sure there'll be news coming in the coming weeks and months. But we need to talk about Harvey Weinstein. You teased it. Now we're going to take a break and talk about Harvey Weinstein, which Lauren is very familiar with, and maybe a little Jeffrey Epstein if we have time. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Need some legal, moral, or just common sense advice from a friend? Call Alan Gervie at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
Yeah, it is a wild life, especially for Harvey Weinstein. We're talking to Gloria Allred, and you, as usual, Gloria, our hour goes by so quickly. We only have about 6 minutes left. Let's get the update on Harvey Weinstein. And as you know, Lauren had obviously a horrific experience with him and has nothing but bad things to say about him. Tell us what's going on with Harvey now and what you're doing with that case.
Okay, well, first of all, I represented the key prosecution witness in the New York criminal case.
That's right.
Mimi Haley, who was very brave.
Very.
And she testified. And based on her testimony and other evidence, Mr. Weinstein was convicted of criminal sexual assault against her and was sentenced to 20 years.
23 years, I believe.
No, actually 20 years for Mimi. There was another victim as well.
Sure.
And for the other victim, I think that was rape in the third degree, essentially sex without consent in New York. He was sentenced to 3 years, but 20 years from my client, who was very, very powerful. And he, of course, now has filed his appeal from that criminal conviction this week. And in that appeal, I mean, the contention is that the interaction was consensual with my client, and he wants a new trial. Ordered in reference to Mimi, and he says that to the other victim that is time barred. So obviously, what I'm saying is that obviously the jury did not agree with the argument by Mr. Weinstein that the interaction with Mimi was consensual, because had they agreed, they wouldn't have convicted Mr. Weinstein of the serious felony. And also, I disagree with Mr. Weinstein's lawyer, who thinks that these other witnesses, I represented two other witnesses in that criminal case as well, that the other witnesses, essentially called prior bad act witnesses, called Molyneux witnesses in New York, he thinks they shouldn't have been allowed to testify, that was more prejudicial than probative. I think that's important because the same issue is going to come up in L.A.
That's right.
In the criminal case. In the prosecution, it's going to take place here. And by the way, I represent two victims for whom charges have been filed here as well in this L.A. criminal case. But the others will also probably be sought, be asked to testify by the prosecutor as prior bad act witnesses. Again, it's going to be up to the court to decide how many and who may also testify other than the victims for whom charges have been filed. No doubt that the defense will fight that and also say that will be more prejudicial than probative. And of course, all evidence against a defendant is prejudicial in some sense. That is because it's intended for the purpose of persuading the jury to convict. But that doesn't mean it shouldn't come in. What that means is it just has to be judged, you know, is it more likely to lead to the truth for the jurors to see that, or more likely to prejudice the defendant? So it's going to have to be a balancing and a weighing. The court will do that.
But it sounds to me that you don't believe that he has a leg to stand on in this appeal.
I would never say that. I think he's got arguments to make. The question is, you know, will they be sufficient in order to, reverse the conviction? By the way, the same arguments about other prior bad act witnesses is being made in the Bill Cosby case.
That's right.
Which is, before the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. And, of course, I represented the majority of the prior bad act witnesses in that criminal case.
Yeah, that's right.
And,
we talked about
right
that.
Right now, it's been months. We are awaiting the decision by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court on whether they are going to reverse Bill Cosby's conviction. Based on that, and there's some other points as well that Mr. Cosby has made. I still have a civil case pending against Mr. Cosby right here in Santa Monica, where we represent a woman who alleges she was the victim of child sexual abuse by Mr. Cosby at the Playboy Mansion in Southern California when she was a minor. So we're awaiting the decision by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court before we proceed to trial on this case.
So there's so much going on.
It's not over yet on any of these cases.
No. It's not over yet. We only have a minute, and it will be over. 1 minute. Last question, yes or no. Gloria, is Lauren a potential witness in the Weinstein case?
I have no idea. You would have to ask either Lauren or the prosecutor, and I'm neither of the above.
Yeah.
But I will say, anyone who does become a witness is very brave. And because it's not easy to sit there and be cross-examined by defense attorneys. And I just give all credit and my heartiest commendation to anyone who's willing to testify in a high-profile case or any case in a court of law.
Very
You're
tough
right.
job. Yeah.
Gloria, thank you so much, as usual.
Thank you, Gloria.
We really enjoy these updates, and congratulations on the Tyndale case. And I'm sure there's a lot more victories coming down the road.
All credit to my clients. Thank you so much. Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Lauren.
Thanks, Gloria.
Looking forward to seeing
you
soon, Gloria. Be well. Lauren.
Thank you.
Alan.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
It's been a pleasure, and I can't wait to do it again.
We're looking forward to it, and have a great birthday month.
Thank you so
much. Tune in next week to Gervie's Law. Thanks for listening.
This show was furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.